the headlines, nearly 17,500 people have been killed in the Israeli attacks on Gaza since October 7th. Palestinians have been responding with rocket fire from the besieged territory. Viral footage shows civilian Palestinians, including doctors, academics, and journalists, stripped and detained by Israeli forces in Gaza. And also in our headlines, people across the world rally to show solidarity with the Palestinians and condemn Israeli genocide in Gaza. Our top story for this half hour, the Israeli regime has carried out airstrikes on the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza, killing 20 displaced Palestinians and sheltering at a house there. Israel bombed northern Gaza as well, striking the cities of Jabalia, Beit Lahia, and Beit Hanun. Khan Yunis in the south is also hit by airstrikes and artillery fire. Dozens of people have been killed and injured in an airstrike targeting a house there. Health officials say many hospitals have already stopped functioning across Gaza due to the relentless Israeli attacks. The remaining ones are struggling to cope with an overwhelming number of injured people. Gaza's oldest mosque, called the Great Omari Mosque, was also destroyed in Israeli strikes. The death toll from more than 2 months of Israeli air attacks topped 17,100. Over 46,000 others have been injured. Most of the victims are women and children. Another prominent Palestinian journalist has fallen victim to the Israeli regime's deadly bombing campaign in the Gaza Strip. Dr. Refat Al-Arir, the founder of the Palestinian Information Center website, was killed in Gaza City. The 44-year-old was killed along with his brother, sister, and her four children in Israeli shelling that targeted residential areas. Al-Arir was a notable English-language professor in the Islamic University of Gaza that has been destroyed in the Israeli attacks. The author of Gaza Writes Back was known for advocating for the Palestine cause. He had numerous notable interviews with Western media outlets debunking the Israeli regime's narrative and promoting the voice of Palestinians. This brings to 75 the number of Palestinian journalists who have been killed in the Gaza Strip since October the 7th. In an interview conducted in October, Dr. Refat Al-Arir explained the dire situation of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. As he speaks, the sound of incessant Israeli bombardments can be heard in the background, forcing him to pause several times.
This is the blitz again, all over, like what happened in London by the Nazis. Unfortunately, by the Israeli Zionists who claim to be the descendants of the victims of the Holocaust are inflicting yet a similar plight, similar catastrophes against the Palestinians. We know that it's very bleak, it's very dark, there's no way out. If there's no water, there is no way out of Gaza, what should we do? Like, drown? Like, commit mass suicide? Is this what Israel wants? And we're not going to do that. And I was telling some friend the other day that I am an academic. Probably the toughest thing I have at home is an Expo marker. But if the Israelis invade, if they barge at us, charge at us, open door to door, to massacre us, I'm going to use that marker, throw it at the Israeli soldiers, even if that is the last thing that I would be able to do. And this is the feeling of everybody. We are helpless. We have nothing to lose.
Refat, you're an academic, and you are a teacher, and you have inspired and taught and mentored many of the writers who contribute to the Electronic Intifada. Are you in touch with some of your students and colleagues? Are you able to stay in touch with people around you?
I just ventured out to the pharmacy to bring some medicine, and was my car was almost bombed 5 times. Just driving for 5 minutes.
Another Israeli propaganda hoax has been exposed. This after videos and pictures showed Israeli forces detaining several dozen Palestinians, partially stripped, blindfolded, with their hands tied behind their backs. Israeli media suggested that the detainees were Hamas members, but testimonies by Palestinians revealed that the detainees were in fact civilians from different walks of life. Our correspondent Mona Kandil has more on that story for us.
The Israelis then circulated these footage and videos claiming that the Israeli forces arrested dozens of Palestinians, Hamas members, and they claimed that many of those Palestinian men had surrendered to the Israeli army. Palestinians from the Gaza Strip, many of the relatives of those Palestinians even abroad, outside the occupied territories and outside the Gaza Strip, were saying that those are Palestinian civilians. The Israelis took them by force. They took them to an area no one knows where those people had been taken. They are not Hamas fighters or members or have any links to any of the resistance groups. They are Palestinian university students, including doctors and people from all walks of life. One of those men who had been detained from the Beit Lahia area was Diya Al-Kahlout. Diya Al-Kahlout is a Palestinian journalist. He is the correspondent for the New Arabs Arabic Service, Al Arab Al Jadid. And family members knew he was one of those who had been detained because they saw him, one of those Palestinians who had been detained. So at the end of the day, the Israelis are trying to use it as a hoax of propaganda, claiming that they succeeded to detain and round up dozens of Palestinians, members of the resistance groups, including Hamas movement, Palestinian fighters, or had been affiliated to Hamas movement. They tried to deceive the world that as you were saying in the case of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Aqli, at the first they said they didn't know, maybe she had been killed by the fire of Palestinian fighters. The Israelis claimed that there were exchange of fire between Palestinians and the Israeli forces, and they think she might be killed by the fire of the Palestinian resistance groups there in Jenin area. Journalists were with Shireen Abu Aqli that they said that, and one of them was Palestinian journalist, and he was shot and wounded. He said that the Israelis had been opening fire at them. They were the only journalists there in that area, and there were no Palestinian fighters in the other area.
As the Israeli military campaign in Gaza continues, nowhere remains safe from the regime's indiscriminate bombardment. Now some of the survivors of the latest Israeli air attacks in the city of Khan Yunis give an eyewitness account of the situation that they face.
What happened is we were staying in an area that is, according to maps, a safe area. Children were on the streets playing, living life normally, going to a shop or so. And suddenly we went out after the head hearing screams to find youth, children, women and men in body parts, among them martyrs and injured. Those children, youth and women were very far, about 500, 600 or 700 meters from the mosque that was hit, but we left the houses on the screams of children and women to suddenly find a lot, more than 20 in parts, some injured and some martyrs lying on the ground.
I lost around 23 of my family members, between my siblings, nephews, aunt, and nieces. Thank God. From my mother and father's side, we were around 11 siblings, 6 women and 5 men. I am the only man left now, with 3 of my sisters. I lost my brother from my father, from another mother. Dr. Mazen Al-Hassan, I lost him and 3 of his sons. My 3 sisters also lost their children. Thank God. They bombed our house. I, my mother, and 3 of my sisters made it safely outside the house.
2 months into the Israeli bloodshed in Gaza, the regime has not been held accountable for its crimes against Palestinians. We've talked to journalist and political analyst Julia Kossam on that issue. Let's take a listen.
Just human rights organizations all around have emphasized that Gaza has become, such as the UN Secretary General, that Gaza's literally become a graveyard for children in attacks that have disproportionately killed children, which make up around half, a little bit under half of the casualties alone. And the Zionist entity is constantly committing these crimes without any condemnation by the so-called international community, which rewards these mass murders and this genocide of children with continued supplies of weapons and bombs. Obviously, nobody can hide the genocide that is going on against civilians and that's disproportionately causing these horrific massacres to children. So the West is going to, throw some, empty words in about requesting that the Zionist entity minimizes civilian casualties, or that their delivery of weapons are going to come with the intent of minimizing civilian casualties while, quote unquote, targeting Hamas, which less than 10%, and that is a generous estimate of those killed so far, have been Hamas fighters or Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip.
The UN humanitarian office has raised the alarm over the situation in Rafah in the southern Gaza Strip. That's where thousands of Palestinians are taking shelter from Israeli attacks. The UN office says the conditions in Rafah are extremely overcrowded and getting worse. It says that people are in desperate need of food, water, shelter, and health care. And they have to wait for hours to get basic aid. According to the UN office, there's also a lack of sanitation services in Rafah. To the north of Gaza, the situation is dire as well. UN agencies say lack of adequate clean water has forced people to use unsafe sources. That has raised concerns about waterborne diseases. On Wednesday, the UN chief raised the alarm as well, urging the Security Council to avert a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. And as the Israeli attacks on Gaza continue, Palestinian fighters have been mounting resistance operations inside the territory and launching retaliatory attacks against regime targets outside it. According to media reports, sounds of explosives were heard in some of Tel Aviv's neighborhoods following a barrage of rockets fired from Gaza. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement also said that it launched missiles targeting the Israeli city of Ashkelon to the south of the occupied territories, as well as other towns near Gaza. There's been no immediate report of casualties as intense fighting continues across the coastal strip, including Khan Yunis in the south. Israel has confirmed the death of nearly 100 of its soldiers in Gaza. However, Hamas says the actual number is higher. And the military wing of Hamas says a captive Israeli soldier has been killed in clashes between resistance fighters and Israeli forces trying to release him. The Al-Qassam Brigade says its fighters clashed with Israeli troops dispatched to reach the 25-year-old captive. It added that a number of Israeli troops were also killed and injured without specifying. The Al-Qassam says that Israeli warplanes also intervened, bombing the area where the clashes took place to cover a retreat by the regime's ground forces. Hamas took around 240 captives during its Al-Aqsa flood operation on October the 7th. It says that a number of the captives have been killed in Israel's strikes on Gaza. The movement released dozens of civilian captives as part of a 7-day ceasefire last month. People in several countries, including Yemen, have staged fresh rallies in support of Palestinian people condemning the Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip. Yemenis rallied in the capital, Sana'a, as well as the city of Sa'ada, reiterating their solidarity with the Palestinians. In Jordan, people took to the streets of the capital, Amman, and the city of Aqaba. They blame the U.S. support for Israel for the genocide in Gaza, calling for a boycott of American products. They also denounce the Western country's silence on Israeli massacre. Similar protests also took place in the North African country of Tunisia, as well as the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khanir. Such rallies have also been taking place in U.S., Israel's biggest ally. In the most recent such demonstration, protesters gathered outside the Egyptian consulate in New York City on Thursday. They called for an immediate ceasefire and for the permanent opening of the crossing of Rafah lifeline for Palestinians. And a new report reveals that around 500,000 Israelis have left the occupied territory since the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza, according to the Israeli Population and Immigration Authority. It's unclear that those who left in droves will come back or not. The revelation does not include thousands of foreign workers, refugees, and diplomats who left Israel. Another report also says that the number of Jews immigrating to Israel has dropped by over 70%. That was released by an Israeli ministry responsible for providing assistance to immigrants. The war on Gaza has taken a heavy toll on Israel's economy as well. Almost 30% of businesses have either closed down or are operating at reduced capacity. Even before the war, Israel had been witnessing an increase in the number of people seeking foreign passports or residence visas. That was due to a controversial judicial reform pushed by the regime. Iraqi resistance groups have conducted new attacks on two American military bases in retaliation for the U.S. support of the Israeli regime and its war on Gaza. The groups say they launched a missile attack at Ain al-Assad base in western Iraq. U.S. forces based near the Erbil International Airport also came under a drone attack. A missile attack hit another U.S. base in neighboring Syria. The Iraqi resistance groups say the base located in Conoco oil field was directly targeted by missiles. The attacks are the latest in operations against U.S. interests in the region. Since the Gaza war began, the Iraqi resistance says the attacks are in retaliation for U.S.-backed Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Earlier on Friday, rockets landed near the U.S. embassy in Baghdad, setting sirens off. Explosions were heard as well. After that, the U.S. called on Iraq to protect its diplomats. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى و دین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 كتاب الله.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Merciful, the All Compassionate. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, last week we started explanation of Surah Ma'arij, the number 70 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran, which has 44 ayahs and was revealed in Mecca, although according to exegetes, some of its ayahs were revealed in Medina. The title of the surah derives from the word Ma'arij, mentioned in ayah 3. Regarding the places of ascent or lofty stations where, by the permission of the Almighty Creator, angels can ascend. The surah focuses on the Day of Resurrection and warns the polytheists and disbelievers of the dire consequences of their lack of faith, while defining the characteristics of the peoples of paradise and hell. The opening ayahs concern the sending down of torments in this world, such as the one that befell a denier of the divinely designated velayat, or leadership of the Prophet's immaculate cousin and son-in-law, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. We continue from where we left you in the last episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, and here are ayahs 8 and 9.
يَوْمَ تَكُونُ السَّمَاءُ كَالْمُهْلِ وَتَكُونُ الْجِبَالُ كَالْعِهْنِ.
The day when the sky will be like molten copper and the mountains like dyed wool. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we said believers have been advised to be patient and restrained vis-a-vis the persecution by disbelievers without losing hope in divine mercy, because the fate of the faithless is sealed even though they think punishment is far away, while it is very near. It is belief in the day of resurrection and judgment that makes one patient against hardships. The ISV recited to you now draw the picture of the end of the world, when the sky shall be like molten metal, and the mountains shall be like flakes of dyed wool of different color. In other words, they will be torn asunder and melt, while the seemingly mighty mountains shall be shattered and scattered through the wind as if they wool. Such a frightful transformation shall precede the creation of a new world, wherein mankind shall be resurrected for the final judgment. These ayahs teach us that. Number one, the present structure of the world will be completely dismantled and reconstructed. And number two, all mankind will be revived to life, even if their bones had powdered due to the lengthy centuries and millenniums, and will be assembled for the reckoning of deeds. Now we listen to ayahs 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 of the same surah.
وَلَا يَسْأَلُ حَمِيمٌ حَمِيمًا يُبَصَّرُونَهُمْ يَوَدُّ الْمُجْرِمُ لَوْ يَفْتَدِي مِنْ عَذَابِ يَوْمِئِذٍ بِبَنِيهِ وَصَاحِبَتِهِ وَأَخِيهِ وَفَصِيلَتِهِ الَّتِي تُؤْوِيهِ.
And no friend will inquire about a friend. They will be placed within each other's sight. The guilty one will wish he could ransom himself from the punishment of that day at the price of his children, his spouse and his brother, and his kin which had sheltered him, and all those who are on the earth, if that might rescue him. The ayahs that you heard are a horrendous description of the day of resurrection in the reconstructed world, when people will be so preoccupied with the record of their past deeds that no friend will ask about the fate of another friend, even when they see each other, since the sinners think of only saving themselves from the torments at any cost. They would desire to victimize even their own children, spouses, brothers, and kith and kin that were their protectors, as well as all the people on the planet, in a bid to find deliverance from the terrible punishments that are the result of their own evil deeds, but to no avail. These ayahs teach us that. Number one, on the day of resurrection, friends and relatives will see each other, but no one will be of help to anyone, and no son, daughter, wife, sister, brother, kith and kin can be the ransom for averting divine punishment. Number two, in our worldly life, we ought to be careful about the correctness of our beliefs, words, and deeds. That should not be against what the Almighty Creator has decreed for our welfare through prophets, heavenly scriptures, and the true saints, in order to ensure our salvation. And number three, there is no escape from the justice of the all-merciful Lord, who never wrongs anyone and has shown immense compassion, which means it is intransigent disbelief and evil deeds that seal the fate of the sinners. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, let us listen to ayahs 15, 16, 17, and 18 of Surah Ma'arij.
وَمَنْ فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا ثُمَّ يُنْجِيهِ كَلَّا إِنَّهَا لَظَى نَزَّاعَةً لِلشَّوَى تَدْعُو مَنْ أَدْبَرَ وَتَوَلَّى وَجَمَعَ فَأَوْعَى.
Never, indeed, it is a blazing fire that strips away the scalp. It claims him who turned away from the truth and forsook it, and those amassing and hoarding wealth. These ayahs mean to say that no ransom is accepted to save those destined to be cast into the blazing fire of hell, which burns away limbs and even the skinhead. These terrible flames pull towards them those who had turned away from divine commandments, ridiculed prophets and mocked at saints, and the righteous guides who used to warn against the consequences of disbelief and sins. That not just includes oppression of fellow human, but acquiring wealth through hook or crook and hoarding it, but spending it for good cause and the welfare of humanity. We learn from these ayahs that, number one, there is no escape from divine punishment for those who continued their evil ways and indulged in deviated beliefs even when given ample time for repentance. And number two, there is no harm in earning money or acquiring wealth through lawful means, but after meeting one's needs, this should be spent in the way of Allah and the welfare of the needy.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, karama is an internal trait. It's a result of my relationship with God. It's an internal trait. If the child's inner voice has been awakened, that person, without being forced, will stay away from things that they consider to be ugly, disgusting, low, and despicable. Many parents, this is a mistake that parents make. Some religious parents, good parents, caring parents, make a mistake that they make. Some parents are very focused on controlling from the outside, monitoring, stopping. Don't do that. Don't, right? I'm controlling from the outside. This method of tarbiyah that we get from Sayyidah Fatima is one that focuses on strengthening the conscience. I'm going to mention the hadith of the imam about the inner voice. You've heard from me before where Imam Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam talked about the inner voice, that the believer needed three things for tawfiq. One of them was that inner voice, right? The imam's going to talk about that. What happens? If you and I, the only reason, now again, by the way, let me just make sure this is clear. It doesn't mean, I'm not saying that there is no need for al-amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar. I'm not saying there's no need to be that social circle to talk to our children. I'm not saying that. That's necessary. What I'm talking about is if good behavior is dependent on outside monitoring. It's not I'm not self-motivated. I'm not driven. The reason I seem religious is because you're pushing me, but not because the relationship between me and God has developed. That's what I'm talking about. So karama is that inner voice of the child being awakened. The outside monitor, the buddy system, always checking, right? That's not always there. If there was a child who was able to maintain their faith for 14 years, right? But because I had them under lock and key, that's not always there. The inner voice is. Hadith now. So this one is from Imam Ali again. He says, "Man kana lahu min nafsihi wa'idhun." So that person who has a wa'idh, an admonisher, min nafsihi, an inner voice, a voice inside them that's talking to them, that's advising them, that's warning them. This person, kana alayhi min Allah hafidh. This person actually has a guardian from God. The outside monitoring isn't always there, but the inner voice is. If I've been able to awaken that inner voice by raising them with karama, they will always have that inner voice and they're going to be able to control themselves. Next one. How does tarbiyah, which is based on karama, shape a child's moral compass? Later on, one of the arkan, one of the pillars about the discussion of raising children with the moral is going to be the moral compass. How does karama shape the moral compass? First, allow me to just say a few words about the moral compass. Brothers and sisters, all of us have a moral compass. My moral compass determines the value that I give to certain actions. Sometimes in life, I'm faced with hard choices. My moral compass is what tells me, well, do this or don't do that. Avoid this or this must be done. It's the moral compass that's directing me, that's pushing me, and that's making me make the right decisions. The moral compass. Our question is, how does karama help develop this moral compass? I'll give you some examples. The sense or the need for self-preservation, how strong is that? All of us, we as human beings, the need for self-preservation. Absolutely, very strong, must be there. It's driving us. I want to give you two examples of a moral compass developed based on karama, and then after that we'll move on to our next topic. So, two examples. One of them is about one of our shuhada. This is a commander. This man was a commander. And his name is Shahid Amlaki. Shahid Amlaki was the kind of person who would always put himself in danger to rescue others. He's a commander, but he put himself in danger to rescue others. They talk about how Shahid Amlaki became a Shahid. What happened was they were in an area, in a position, the enemy started to rain chemical bombs down on them. Everybody went, and they went for a mask. Protect yourself. Self-preservation. Shahid Amlaki gets his mask. There's another soldier laying there wounded. That soldier, his moral compass was self-protection. He said, that's my mask. He wants to survive. He's wounded. I want to stay alive. Shahid Amlaki, his moral compass, he takes his gas mask off, goes to the wounded soldier, carefully, the cyanide is there, and carefully fastens the mask to the face of the soldier so the soldier lives and the shaheed passes. Right? One moral compass, survive. One moral compass, sacrifice. Another one from Shahid Ibrahim Hadi. So again, these are things, because I told you that shaheed, it was multiple times that he would go behind enemy lines to bring bodies back. He would do that. That was the way he had developed himself. Right? Somebody has trained themselves. Some people haven't worked on themselves. Another example, Shahid Ibrahim Hadi. So they're saying this, that there was a situation where there were six commanders, right? So these are the best of the Mu'mineen, six commanders, three from the army, three from the Revolutionary Guard, And they're in discussing what's in such action that they're about to take. A grenade flies through the window. The guy who's telling the story, he's telling what happened. A grenade flies through the window. He said, as soon as we see the grenade fly through the window, he said, I jumped to whatever corner of the room I could, and I tried to ball myself. A grenade's about to explode. I want to ball up so that I don't get killed by. And each one of us leapt to a corner. A few seconds passed. He said, I peeked from behind my eyes because I don't hear an explosion. And everybody was surprised. Ibrahim Hadi is on the grenade. Somebody burst through the door. They said it was a dummy grenade. And then Ibrahim got up. Ibrahim's moral compass is I die that you live. Our discussion is what does karama and raising children with dignity, Islamic dignity, based on a relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, what role does that play in shaping the person's moral compass?
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Regrettably, most Western European countries have aligned themselves with an American-led imperialism that suppresses liberation movements and stifles global dissent. We have taken a look at the world press and media's and news agencies' coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. There is a prevalent belief in the dominance of Western civilization, predominantly materialistic in its composition, despite its contradictory stance towards Islam. This Western civilization emphasizes material wealth over spirituality and morals, often driven by the ambition to assert hegemony and control over both people and their economic and natural resources. This has shaped an imperial system driven solely by the pursuit of power, surpassing moral and ethical considerations. The values it embodies disregard international norms and legal boundaries. operating under a principle that seemingly allows any means to achieve its objectives. Today, the New World Order is epitomized by a barbaric regime that transcends all human norms and conventions to achieve absolute control over people's capabilities. It imposes apartheid-like laws and fosters a view of non-white Anglo-Saxons as inferior, aiming to humiliate them. Regrettably, most Western European countries have aligned themselves with this American-led imperialism, which tramples upon human values, suppresses all liberation movements, and stifles global dissent. A large gap exists between governments and peoples who oppose this hegemony, which is symbolized by multinational corporations, the military-industrial complex, targeted media, Zionist lobbies, and similar entities. Free societies comprehend the nature of this system and its goals, yet they struggle to confront it directly, lacking the courage to resist and safeguard the natural and economic capabilities of the oppressed. The relentless brutality of this racist regime stems from its bankruptcy of values, the complete dissolution of moral systems, and the erosion of beliefs. It exhibits an unfettered approach towards any culture or civilization opposing its dominance, resorting primarily to forceful measures. Amid these arrogant policies, the Western world appears stagnant, surrendering to the law of the jungle, devoid of any glimmer of hope for meaningful opposition. Freedom of speech is suppressed and criticism is muffled. The dominant political forces in Western regimes implement repressive policies without accountability or oversight, while intellectual or military challenges against this global dominance are notably absent. Within this intricate international structure, with its economic, political, and military might, we witness the Palestinian people enduring massacres perpetrated by the Israeli regime, bolstered by the latest military technology and with boundless economic and political support. The Zionist regime historically enjoyed European support and is presently under US leadership, which in turn uses Israel as a strategic ally in the West Asia region to pursue its security, economic and political interests. In light of the objective developments in this new world order, there is blatant support for the Israeli regime's occupation, oppressing a defenseless population whose only crime is their quest for self-determination and the right of return. It has become evident that the ongoing war in Gaza is aimed at undermining the Palestinian cause under the pretext of eliminating the resistance movement Hamas. Under the Zionist regime, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing government, there is no recognition of the two-state solution, the Oslo Accords, or agreements with the Palestinian leadership. Netanyahu's government's agenda has become clear: annexation and displacement to end the Palestinian issue. The impressive demonstrations across European capitals should pressure their governments to reconsider their positions and bear responsibility for the Israeli regime's crimes. The magnitude of these protests will inevitably influence the outcomes of upcoming elections in the West. The Zionist regime's position is perfectly clear: one apartheid regime and complete subordination to this racist regime. The struggle that has gone on for 75 years must materialize into the establishment of a unified Palestinian state, rejecting any possibility of its fragmentation, regardless of the cost. The unyielding resilience and heroism displayed by the Palestinian people has been pivotal in this regard. Western civilization is in the midst of a collapse in its structure, ideologies and moral framework, which has become explicit in its failure to lead the modern world. There must be a profound and dynamic shift towards a civilization that accommodates inclusivity based on equitable justice, fundamental human values, and free democratic principles. History is not written by the victor. Rather, it is inscribed by the people through their revolutions and achievements. Undeniably, the international community is increasingly acknowledging the prospect and practicality of a Palestinian state with the city of Al-Quds as its capital, particularly in the aftermath of the devastating events of destruction, displacement and loss of life among defenseless Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The sacrifices made are significant and heart-wrenching, emblematic of a people standing up against a brutal occupation. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Providing all-inclusive assistance to Palestinians and thoroughly supporting them is kafaya, obligation for Muslims. March 4th, 2009. Our great community, with the blessing of the Islamic awakening, possesses tremendous power. The key to the solution of many of the problems of the Muslim countries lies in resoluteness and solidarity. The question of Palestine is the most urgent problem of the Islamic world. At times, some people are heard to say that Palestine is an Arab problem. What does that mean? If it means that there is a stronger feeling of consanguinity among the Arabs, who are willing to offer Palestine a greater service and do more struggle for its sake, that is something desirable and we welcome it. But if it means the heads of some Arab countries should refuse to pay any heed to the cries of help of the Palestinian people, which are addressed to all Muslims, if it means that they may collaborate with the ruthless usurper enemy in such an important case as the tragedy of Gaza, while loudly condemning others who cannot remain indifferent to their call of duty to help Gaza, then no proud and conscientious Muslim or Arab will accept it, nor spare the speaker of disapproval and reproach. It is the same as the logic of Ahzam, who used to beat his father and chide others for interfering. After him, his son would assault the grandfather with his fists. The fable is the source of an Arabic proverb, which means, "My sons have left me covered with blood," a custom that I know was laid down by Ahzam. Offering a multifaceted assistance to the people of Palestine and complete support is a joint duty of all Muslims. The governments which criticize the Islamic Republic of Iran and some other Muslim countries for assisting Palestine should come forward to bear the burden of such support, so that others are relieved of this Islamic duty. But if they lack the ability and courage to do so, instead of criticism and causing hindrance, they should appreciate the dutiful and courageous steps taken by others.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Palestine will regain its Islamic Arabic identity. March 4th, 2009. A big fallacy which has taken control of the minds of some persons concerning the problem of Palestine is that a country named Israel is a 60-year reality. A big fallacy which has taken control of the minds of some persons concerning the problem of Palestine is that a country named Israel is a 60-year-old reality with which one has to reconcile. I do not know why these people do not learn from other realities that are in front of their eyes.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.